This is special coverage from WBUR in Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Just a stone's throw from the former World Trade Center, slightly north and a little west, a neighborhood quietly recovers from the September 11th attacks. Tonight, we're taking an intimate look at Manhattan's Tribeca neighborhood, living and learning in the shadow of disaster. The recovery process for New Yorkers is happening at many levels, economic, emotional, and physical. An ambitious study is underway in New York to understand the consequences of the September 11th attacks for people in Lower Manhattan on the day two huge towers turned to toxic dust. Dr. Gertrude Berkowitz is looking at the possible health effects on pregnant women. I asked her what the risks might be and how she was going about finding the women.
We are going to be sending out a mass mailing to all the obstetricians, which is around 3,000 in the tri-state area, asking them for permission to contact patients of theirs who may have been affected. We will also contact employers and medical centers and community organizations. And in addition, we actually have a fairly large number of women, pregnant women, who have actually contacted us because they had heard about the study and they would like to participate.
What are researchers concerned about with pregnant women or with other workers who may have been exposed to the huge cloud of dust and toxic substances that came on and after September 11th? What's the real concern?
We don't have any direct evidence that the levels of chemicals and metals from the fire and collapse are harmful for pregnant women. We do know certainly that they're respiratory irritants, but in terms of affecting the pregnancy, we don't have any direct evidence. But there are lots of things that we don't know about. For example, what the combination of exposures may affect. And also, we will be evaluating the role of stress and anxiety, which has been found in some studies to have an effect on pregnancy outcome.
Is there any precedent in the medical literature for such a population of people being exposed to such a blast of dust and smoke from other demolition, from volcanoes? I don't know what.
I don't know of any, certainly not documented.
And what's the consequence of that for doctors now? Does it leave you feeling some lack of insight as to problems you need to anticipate?
It's very difficult to be able to counsel pregnant women because we don't have the scientific data, and that is really the reason why we feel it's so important to undertake this study. And we're hoping that, you know, the data are going to be reassuring and not concerning. And as I said, we don't have any evidence of actual harmful effects of the various chemicals.
Do you have any sense that apart from the scale of the explosion, that the September 11th blast and everything that hung in the air for days afterwards is different from any urban fire or demolition site? Is it just an explosion on a giant scale, or is there something else that may be different about it?
Oh, that's a difficult question to answer. I think one of the differences perhaps with other fires and explosions relates to what was contained in those buildings. We know there was a large number of computers, all kinds of electrical equipment and so on. And so in that sense, that may be different from other fairly large-scale fires.
And what's the evidence been of pregnant women in particular being stressed by this? Are they calling in saying that they are stressed with worry that their pregnancy might be affected, or that they're simply grieving like many other people and that might have a psychological impact?
I think that there are two sort of components. One is just the psychological trauma of the event and having been there. And secondly, the question, is there anything that I need to worry about in terms of my baby?
There must be medical literature that looks at psychological trauma in pregnancy. What's the general view there?
The data are actually are not consistent. There are some studies that have shown that stressful life events could be associated with premature birth. Other studies have found no association, even when pregnant women were exposed to very stressful events. So it's really not clear.
Dr. Gertrude Berkowitz is lead investigator of the 9/11 pregnancy study at Mount Sinai Hospital. She spoke to us from New York. In the Tribeca neighborhood of Manhattan, just below Canal Street, west of Broadway, the kids are back in school. People have reestablished their routines. But on a larger scale, life is decidedly not back to normal. The playgrounds have been paved over to make way for wreckage crews. The neighborhood trees are still covered in a dusty film, and the thousands of tourists that used to stop the residents looking for hip art galleries and trendy restaurants are now looking for ground zero in the emotional roller coaster that pilgrimage brings. This hour, an intimate look at the neighborhood that lives and breathes in the shadow of disaster. Have you been to Lower Manhattan? What are you hearing from friends and family who live in New York City? You can join our conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now from New York is Lisa Kraft, a 16-year resident of Tribeca. She lives there with her husband and daughter. Good evening, Lisa Kraft.
Hi, good evening.
Hi, thanks for joining us. And from the studios of Vermont Public Radio, our own special coverage news analyst, Jack Beatty. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Lisa Kraft, what do you see when you walk around Tribeca today?
Well, the streets are pretty empty because the schools still aren't back. Most of the schools have had to relocate to different neighborhoods. So there's kind of a haunted feeling where there's no children and it's very quiet. But then there's lots of construction going on. There's lots of construction workers and there's lots of people with maps trying to find ground zero.
Lisa, how far is situate Tribeca for us to the World Center or Trade Center disaster site? How near is the nearest portion? What's the geography here?
Well, it's funny because that you should ask that because when people used to say, well, where do you live? And I'd say Tribeca. They'd say, well, where's that? And I'd say it's near the World Trade Center. So I'm about 800 yards north near the Hudson River. In Lower Manhattan. So I guess it would be called the Lower West Side.
So from your street, from your block, before September 11th, would you look up and see the two towers?
Oh, yeah. They were a real part of our life. In fact, when my daughter was little and we'd walk around and she'd be in the stroller and I'd say, let's go find where home is. Where's home? And she'd just look up and her little finger would point to the World Trade Centers and she'd go, home.
That was the marker. That was the sign. Wow. You've lived in Tribeca for 16 years, so there's been a dramatic change, obviously, recently, but you've seen a lot of change there. Give us a feeling for the flavor of the neighborhood over that time.
Well, when we first moved in, there were lots of empty buildings. There was a building across the street that we called the Pigeon Hotel, and it was an empty building with broken windows that pigeons flew in and out that over the years got turned into a multi-million dollar condo.
Was that representative of what was going on generally in Tribeca?
Yeah, because when we first moved in, it was a real hinterland. And there was one grocery store, but mostly if you had to do anything to function, you had to leave the neighborhood.
And as the 90s unfolded?
Well, it became more and more upscale. People started to know where it was, and galleries moved in, but mostly restaurants. It became a real restaurant destination place. And movie stars moved in, and it became a place where, I guess you'd call it the urban equivalent of trophy homes, where you'd have a loft in Tribeca, and it was your bragging rights. And it was kind of embarrassing to say that you lived there.
Because it was suddenly such a posh and kind of hip place to be.
Right.
Are you a hipster, Lisa Kraft?
Oh, you bet.
And so here we are in the shadow of the Trade Center, a hip and trendy and very lively place to be. And then September 11th, how's the culture of Tribeca changed? It must be a thousand ways, but give us a sense.
Well, in a way, it's become a small community again. A lot of people left. I see many empty lofts outside my window, although I don't think the real estate's gone down that much, so it's not this isn't to say, quick, run down. but people have really bonded in a very profound way, and the community has really asserted itself with all its heart and helped in the relief effort and helped in just helping everybody who's been displaced and had a hard time.
Is it still that hot, hip, happening neighborhood? How's the edge of fashion been treated by the disaster?
I'll tell you, I was never part of that, so I'm sort of an outsider in that department, but we do have a new Issey Miyake store, which was supposed to open on September 12th, I think.
And you said people are actually, there are lofts standing empty now.
Is
that because people have moved away? They don't want to live there now?
Yes, definitely.
Why?
Had the downstairs neighbor who, mostly people with young children are afraid that it's not a safe neighborhood anymore. And they were scared of the air quality, and a lot of people just got out really fast.
Give us a sense physically of what the consequences were of September 11th. Was there debris in this neighborhood? Were things dust covered? Is this the scenes of Pompeii and Tribeca like we saw right around the World Trade Center and the air and all the rest of it? What was the physical experience of the fall?
It varied block to block. The closer you were, the more you had debris. There was a huge building, which was 7 World Trade Center, which, because of its height, it fell later in the day, but it prevented a lot of the debris from going down Greenwich Street, which is the big avenue near my house. So we didn't get a lot of debris, but many of my neighbors did. And then people were without water, without gas, without phone, without electricity. People still are without phones. Everyone had to get cell phones, or many people did. We were on the block where you still had phones and you still had electricity. So I was in the fortunate area where I was able to function. I couldn't get phone calls out. I mean, I couldn't make phone calls out, but I could get phone calls in, and luckily email always stayed up.
Did it feel like you were living in one of the world's most cosmopolitan cities or something else?
Oh, gosh. No, it felt like we were in a tiny little village that was shut off from the rest of the world, because you had to go through three police barricades showing ID to get home. And sometimes they wouldn't even let you through and say, well, you know, there were rumors flying left and right that, oh, this building's falling down, that building's falling down, you can't go home. And then you'd try another guard and they'd let you through. So you felt it was very disorienting, and they used our neighborhood as a staging area for the rescue and recovery effort. So the only people down there were a few natives who hadn't fled, and a few businesses who the owners lived there, so they were able to keep their businesses open, and rescue workers. And so it became the natural thing to do to help with the rescue effort, because that was what was happening in the neighborhood.
Lisa, we're going to talk after a break soon about how all this affected your family, your neighbors, the kind of psychology of day-to-day life there, and what kind of effects might last. Jack Beatty, you hear this story of a corner of a huge, vibrant city turned into a kind of a hinterland and little hamlet. What an experience, huh?
Yeah, what an experience indeed. I wanted to ask Lisa just briefly. I had heard from somebody who lived near your neighborhood that there was a kind of telescoping of the fall's terrors when the rumor spread about that there was anthrax in these planes, that this was part of what impelled people to run up Broadway. Did you hear those rumors on September 11th? Was that?
I didn't hear them on September 11th. No, I didn't hear those at all. Mm-hmm. It was just the natural thing to do. I mean, we stayed until both buildings fell down. And
then?
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're still here. We're going out in a minute. Keep us in suspense. We're going to take a quick break.
All right.
We can only imagine the end then.
Okay.
We're talking with Lisa Kraft, and soon with other residents of Tribeca in the shadow of the former World Trade Centers, about what life has been like through the fall and winter, living, digging out, psychologically, physically, in every way. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Have you been to New York? What have you heard? Can you imagine living right next door? We're at 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're digging in tonight to Tribeca, the little New York neighborhood right next to the disaster site where the World Trade Center towers came down. We're going to be talking with a lot of residents there about what it was like to live through that and what it's like now to come blinking out into the sunshine a little bit again and look at how their lives, their minds, their families, their neighborhoods have been changed. Our guest at the moment is Lisa Kraft. She's lived in Tribeca for 16 years. You can join us as well. Have you been to New York? What have you heard? Would you have the spunk to live there now, to carry on? Lisa Kraft, tell us, what is it? What has the impact been for your family? What was it like when you got out of the immediate shock of the 11th, and how has it changed your family, your block, your neighborhood?
Well, on the 11th, we had to go get our daughter and some other neighborhood children at a school that they attend that's way uptown, and the only way to get there was walking. So it was a 2.5-hour walk, and the walk was just amazing. It was quiet and orderly, and there were thousands and thousands of people, some covered with dust, some barefoot. But everybody was quiet and cooperative, and we got the children, brought them back, and as they approached the neighborhood, they saw that it looked like the whole neighborhood was on fire and filled with smoke. And they got very frightened, and we said, we're not going to do anything that's not safe, and your parents are okay, they're expecting you, and we'll go home and you know, take it one step at a time, and we promise we won't do anything that's not safe. And so when we got back to our neighborhood, the smell was overwhelming, and we felt like we needed to remove ourselves. So for just 2 days, we moved to another neighborhood, which actually still smelled, but it was 10 blocks north.
Was it the smell of a burning building that we all know, Lisa Kraft?
It's a very complicated smell. It was a mixture of everything that was in the building, and it was an acrid and sweet and powerful smell. And so when we came back, everybody was saying, well, why don't you leave? Come to my weekend house. Come away. Come
get
to
out
Vermont.
Of there.
Come to Massachusetts. Come, you know, wherever our families and friends were. And we just saw all these people marching down to the World Trade Center to help. And we just wanted to join that. And so it was a very difficult decision because having a 12-year-old child, part of me was saying, well, it would be the best thing to do to bring her to the country for
get
the weekend. And then I thought, I think the better thing for her to do is and for all of us, is to stay here and help because this is our neighborhood.
Yeah. You don't want to get disassociated and, right then.
Right. And so, you know, there was a restaurant right across the street that was serving workers, just handing out food. And we decided, at the beginning, we were helping them, and then we made our own food. And then my daughter started baking cookies, and she was handing them out. And she turned to us and said, I'm so glad we stayed.
Lisa Kraft, it's hard for most of us to imagine pulling through that, let alone raising, nurturing a daughter through that. How has your family coped with it? How have you changed? How has it changed the conversations around the kitchen table?
Well, we talked about it. My husband and I are both artists, and we talked about how life is full of different types of stresses and that we have to have coping mechanisms. And the ones that we came up with were what we called, jokingly, I suppose, art therapy and helping others therapy and disseminating information therapy. And those were the three things that we all did. And my daughter has a camera, and we walked around the neighborhood, and she made a photo journal of how her neighborhood has changed. And then we did different other things to help, and eventually a group of people in the neighborhood got together and put on a big, it was called a gathering for downtown kids because so many kids had lost their homes, either temporarily or permanently. Mm-hmm. So many kids had to move to new schools. The soccer fields were closed. Everything was very disjointed, and there was a feeling that we wanted to let the kids know that there was still a community. So a group of people got together, and it was a real success. All the restaurants contributed food. Musicians came, and Pearl Paint donated more art supplies than any kids could ever
Sounds like
use.
Just a ticket.
It was just a wonderful event. And we had also invited the children of our local fire and police station and the sanitation workers, who had just been phenomenal. And the firemen said that they couldn't come because they were going to funerals all weekend. But at some point, they came in their brand new fire engine and let all the kids come and sit in the fire engine. It was just beautiful.
Lisa Kraft, we've got a lot of your community who's going to join us tonight. I want to bring in right now Deborah Ortega. She's co-owner of a small restaurant called Pinchos in Tribeca. Hello, Deborah Ortega.
Hi.
Good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. I hope you've heard a little bit of our conversation with Lisa. We're trying to get a sense of what it's been like to live in the extreme, extraordinary time and circumstances that you all have there. I guess a simple question, what's business been like for your restaurant since September?
Well, I can tell you Chapter 11 has been on the back burner for a while, and we're just holding in there. And, you know, you don't want to do it because you have responsibility to many things and employees. And so it's a hard thing.
How long have you had the restaurant, Deborah?
We're going into our fourth year.
And what was business like last summer?
Oh, we always look forward to the fall. It was one of the favorite times of the year. People came back to the city. It was a new, joyous time. And so we were embracing September.
What kind of food do you serve?
Basque.
Basque food, so northern
Spain.
Northern Spain, southern France, up in the mountains.
Exactly.
Well, do you fill the restaurant ever? Sometimes, never these days.
Oh yeah, you know, there's days, weekends, you know, without fail. It's very popular. Lunches, we have a very consistent crowd. Although many times my the people that come to my restaurant, the regulars, are becoming a little irregular as the business is closed down in that area and, move on to other places or just downsize.
Is it a tough scene all over for business in Tribeca now? Do you have people coming through to buy, eat, shop?
You know, business is very slow downtown. I think if you're one of these mega restaurants and have a famous celebrity name behind it, you know, those tend to still always draw crowds. You know, it's the mom and poppers and smaller scale restaurants that, are also having a big struggle.
People would
fall off.
Are people from other parts of Manhattan just afraid to come down or just not in the mood to get close to ground zero and have a dinner?
Well, it's kind of grim and lonely. Once I shared a car from downtown Tribeca with some people that were saying, we went to a restaurant tonight and we were one of the two only tables. And I said, yeah, but that's really great that you came and supported because they really need your, business. So they actually felt better after that.
Bless you, patrons. Deborah Ortega, you've moved four times since September 11th. What's that about?
I lived across the street from the World Trade Center. I lived in Battery Park. Mm. Tribeca is now my new residence for now. So, I did make the move from one block west to five blocks north. And so
you had to, I guess. I mean, you couldn't.
Of course, I couldn't move back. I mean, Battery Park became an island within the island. Mm-hmm. You know, the accessibility to it all was very difficult. And you have to traipse across an esplanade behind the Winter Garden to get there or go all the way to the bottom of the island through Bowling Green. And so it's really hard to get to, actually.
How have your spirits been, Deborah? You, your husband, your family?
It's been a roller coaster. You watch everything unfold in that beautiful morning that day. And, you see so much death and destruction. And, you have two children in the city and their schools are displaced and, they're moved two times and now they're thinking of moving the schools back, in a month. And It's hard, psychologically, emotionally, especially when you don't have all the data in front of you, environmentally and health-wise.
Jack, I was in New York last weekend and just looked at Lower Manhattan from across the way in Brooklyn, and you know, I thought I would somehow be inured or be over it, but even from there, which is much further from Tribeca, looking across and seeing that empty spot, I felt the whole surge of emotions coming up. And I'm not living there, and you're not living there every day. Most of us experience this as a kind of a little mini television drama, increasingly distant.
Yeah, and part of it is the fault of television. I don't want to, you know, wrap them. It was part of the news, but someone told.
I think we lost Jack for a minute there. We've got callers who want to join our conversation, and let's turn to them if we can. Alex is calling. Welcome, Alex. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. You know, I was listening to especially Lisa Kraft's story about her experience of going through this trauma and kind of trying to live her life at the same time in the aftermath. And I just with all these stories about the police everywhere and everybody's real tense and everything, it just really reminded me in this really visceral way of the stories we hear about Palestine and a lot of the cities out there now. And it's kind of ironic. A lot of the folks behind the hijackings point to those places as justification for what they did, you know. And
you think they brought it to New York, Alex?
Well, I'm wondering if any of your guests feel any new empathy for the people who live out there in Palestine now, because they are under very similar circumstances.
Well, now that's a very interesting question and kind of a loaded one, because as we know, that was in part, I think, even a stated goal of the terrorists. Lisa Kraft, does that ever cross your mind? Do you feel that someone succeeded in teaching a lesson, or is the feeling very different from a Beirut or a Gaza from what you know of it?
Well, my feeling was when our country started bombing Afghanistan, I just went, I know now what it feels like to be bombed for an hour. And I know what it does to my family, and I know what it does to my neighborhood and the air and everybody around. And I don't know how the people in Afghanistan could bear being under attack for so many years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I actually, one of the first people who called me was a dear friend from Bosnia. And, you know, war has always been something that's across the ocean somewhere that I've always felt a sympathy for, but now I feel it much, much stronger. I sort of feel like I know what it's like more. And
as the days unfolded, did it feel like a war zone? Alex talked about tension, but I hear you also talking about bonding with the police and firemen and sanitation people.
Yeah. In fact, I ended up working at a pier that was feeding highway patrolmen. It was really ironic in a funny way, but I felt that day was a war zone, and afterwards it sort of felt like it, just because the police at the barricades were preventing people from coming in who didn't live there or weren't working there.
Right, so the whole checkpoint feeling going on.
Yeah, so there was that definitely lockdown feeling. Mm-hmm. And
Lisa, you know, and Deborah Ortega, we've got another neighbor of yours to bring in here. Susie Galloway joins us. Hello, Susie Galloway.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. Susie, you're co-owner of a Tribeca clothing boutique, Dale Cherney, D.L. Cherney. I think you and your mother design and make all the clothes there yourselves.
Yes, we do.
How's business?
It's bad. It's really bad. Then the whole neighborhood is just, I think I heard some other people talking about just this feeling of like loneliness and sadness down here. There's just not a lot of like the regular people around. Mm-hmm. And it's really had a huge impact on us, like in every way. I mean, you know, not just financially.
Where's everyone gone, Susie Galloway?
Well, I think that a lot of people that worked here just, you know, they either lost their jobs or their jobs were relocated. And I think that people just aren't coming out, like people from uptown aren't coming down as much. And people who live here are staying home more. It just seems like everything's kind of closed down a little bit.
What a kind of creepy feeling. Susie Galloway, I think you're actually in your store, D.L. Cerny, right now. Is that right?
Right now, I'm in it, yeah.
And you're not just a clothing store owner, but you actually design and make the clothing. Have you been designing clothing since September 11th?
Not really.
Why not?
To be honest with you, I don't really feel very inspired. I have no idea where my business is going at this point. It's just really up and down, and mostly down. And I just don't know where we're going from here. And so all I can say is I just haven't been real inspired to create a new line of clothes. It seems sort of, just not really that important.
Yeah. And Deborah Ortega, what, for you as another business person, restaurant owner, has there been any assistance, either, I don't know, financial aid from the city or federal government or to help relocate?
Or incentives?
Incentives?
Stay and to continue and to fight it through.
Have there been?
There are many with many cans of worms or strings attached and, a lot harder than, it seems. To tell you the truth, I haven't had any assistance in my business directly. But as a displaced resident, I have had assistance.
And Susie, what about you? Are you going to stay? Are you going to hang in there? Do you feel, and I guess more than that, there's so much talk about Manhattan and New York around the country, but do you really feel remembered or forgotten?
Well, I sort of feel a little forgotten. I mean, I don't know. I just we're really, we're very attached to the neighborhood. My mom lives down here also, and we love it here, and it feels like home to us. And we don't want to go, and we, really haven't decided what we're up to. But I mean, it's just very hard. I mean, I know I don't really, maybe I'm not answering your question, but I mean, I just. As far as, the financial assistance and stuff, it's been extremely difficult to really get anything done. We filled out endless forms and papers, and I know that's, worse things have happened to people, but, it's
sounds kind of lonely, Susie Galloway.
It's very lonely.
Yeah. Any customers in your store right now in Tribeca?
No, there's not.
Any this afternoon?
A few this afternoon. We have, the neighborhood, the people in the neighborhood that I see, it's a lot of tourists who come to look at the site, and they single-mindedly go straight down West Broadway.
They don't stop off for designer clothing at D.L. Cerny.
They don't stop off for clothes, and I don't even blame them, to be honest with you. I wouldn't be doing it either.
Susie Galloway, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me.
Susie Galloway is co-owner of the Tribeca clothing store, D.L. Cerny. She and her mom design and make all the clothes themselves, but haven't designed much lately. We're looking closely at a neighborhood right next to the disaster site where the World Trade Center came down to try to remind ourselves and empathize with what it's like to live on the front line of that disaster. It's not just a picture in a box, not just a picture in the television. It's real life. Have you been to New York? What have you heard? Can you imagine living right next door? Would you have the spunk to live there, to carry on? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to special coverage from WBUR Boston. This is special coverage from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight about the little neighborhood of Tribeca. It's in the southwest corner of Manhattan. It's very near the site of the World Trade Center towers before they went down, and how the people are living there in the months as they go by, as the rest of us go on about our business, and Tribeca's struggles to find a road ahead. We're joined by Lisa Kraft. She's lived there 16 years. She's an artist. She lives there with her husband, Ken, and daughter, Gemma. And by Deborah Ortega, who owns a little restaurant called Pinchos in Tribeca. Deborah Ortega, let me ask you, what's all this done to the community? Have people come closer together, or is everyone drifting in their own kind of haze? What's the sense of the community?
Well, for those that stayed, I think they've bonded. They've become a little more open-minded. They've shared information because of so much disinformation. And I'm talking about Battery Park. Tribeca has been my refuge. It's where I ran to live now. And without taking my children completely out of the community and away from the schools and their friends. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is where I'm nesting my family now.
Right there. And Lisa Kraft, how about in your on your block and around your family table, has the texture of conversations changed, have relationships changed in your neighborhood and in your family?
Well, I think in our family things are pretty much the same. We're a tight little trio. Mm-hmm. And we talk about everything, and I think at some point Gemma just asked us to, you know, stop talking about it and change the subject once in a while.
Please, Mom.
Yeah, really. And, you know, having a kid around was great because, you know, she'd go to school and the big event of the day was, you know, some teacher that was being unfair with too much homework. And that was what was much more important than having to have problems coming home on the subway because of anthrax scares. Like, that was just background noise.
Right, right. Hope springs eternal with the young. That's great.
That's great, yeah.
Edward's calling us from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Welcome, Edward. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
We're well, thanks.
I'm looking forward to coming out to New York in April with my wife. She has a conference, and
great.
I'm hoping to go down to the World Trade Center and see. I'm real proud of what people have done in New York. I visited there three or four times a while back, but talking to your people, one of the things I wanted to do is give my support, and I would suggest to the people that work down there is somehow but figure out a way to let people know that how to get to your stores or what's open and what's available.
Bless you, Edward. That's a sentiment I'm sure they're very happy to hear, and thanks for your call with it from Colorado. Lisa, what about it? There's a huge river of people from New York and from all over the country and world now coming to do this kind of homage at the World Trade Center site. Does their path bring them through Tribeca, or do they just never even see it?
It does bring them through. A lot of people walk south on West Broadway, and many do on Broadway, which is on the edge of Tribeca.
Mm-hmm.
But as somebody was saying before, they do seem to be, I guess it was Susie, they are single-mindedly walking to pay their homage and, you know, bear witness to this disaster that people have to look at because it's so incomprehensible even to those of us who saw it. Mm. And I think when they're on their way there or when they're coming back, often they aren't feeling like, oh, let's check out these little stores. But I think it's really important that you do as part of your paying homage is to go and eat at Pinchos and all these restaurants. And
Jack Beatty, are you a big enough man to both take on the emotional weight of that kind of pilgrimage, do you think, and have a bottle of Bas Chianti or whatever at Pinchos?
Well, I look forward to doing it. It's suddenly very meaningful to go there and just to affirm life.
See these,
yeah, and just to see people like Lisa and Deborah and sort of salute them for giving us all a model. I think that's just, well, I found it inspiring.
Yeah.
And just listening to them, listening to their voices, the depth of feeling, the compassion, the wisdom, it's very moving.
It is. Lisa, Deborah, Jack, hang on. We're joined now by Mimi Lester. Mimi, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Hi, Mimi. Mimi's a freshman at Stuyvesant High School, and you live in Tribeca, Mimi?
Yes, I do.
With your folks, brothers, sisters?
With my mother and my 7-year-old brother.
How old are you, Mimi?
I will be 14 next month.
And have you been in Tribeca ever since September 11th?
Well, after September 11th, my brother and I stayed with my father, who lives uptown.
Right, so you cleared out for a while.
Right. They actually wouldn't let us back home.
Right.
My mom has a Red Cross ID,
mm-hmm.
so she stayed here where I live and brought my brother and I clothing.
When did you come back down to your mom's place?
About 2 weeks later.
So not long after, and you've been living there for several months since then.
Right.
Mimi, what do you make of it? It seems almost unfair that somebody your age should even have to try and take on an event of this scale. How are you feeling?
Well, it's a big change. I mean, I just started high school. It was my second day of school. And all of a sudden, my entire neighborhood, I mean, not only my house, but my school, my brother's school, where I grew up, everything around me just fell down, and it altered everything.
How's school since then? Are many of the kids there from Tribeca or from neighborhoods around the World Trade Center site?
No, I'm actually, there's only one person I know, two other people that I know that live in this neighborhood.
Does it feel strange to go from, you know, sort of the edge of the disaster to a school where many, many kids aren't near it at all, don't live near it?
Well, I've never really gone to school with kids from my neighborhood, but now I think people feel sorry for me in a way, but everyone understands what I'm going through, and they all care a lot about it.
How's your 7-year-old brother doing? What's his experience been like compared to yours?
Well, he's in therapy in school with some of his classmates.
Kind of post-trauma therapy, that kind of thing?
Yeah, which I think helps him a lot because he's so young and he doesn't really understand the politics of it. And he doesn't really have any basis for his feelings besides that people are doing bad things.
It must be overwhelming. Has he been crying a lot or couldn't sleep?
He didn't really cry. In the beginning, both of us were upset.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really leave the house or anything. We just sort of sat all day and watched the news. But now he's a lot better. He draws pictures, and he wrote a book with my father's help about it.
Good.
So he seems all right.
Is he able to forget about it sometimes and just laugh and be a 7-year-old?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Well, Lisa and Deborah, you must have given a lot of thought to how this affects kids. What are your thoughts?
Well, I have two children of my own. My son is in therapy. It's been 1 month that he hasn't slept with 4 dream catchers, which is great. I think it's since we moved to Tribeca and, you know, finally had all our things consolidated from our Battery Park home that we left across the street and our temporary home. And, you know, he finally has his own room and he's finally sleeping through the night. And so
he's feeling better.
He's feeling better, but, you know, I'm worried about the move back to the neighborhood, to the school that was the commando center until about a month ago. And it's across the street from Stuyvesant, the school. It's becoming an issue. He's worried already. He's starting to talk about asbestos and things.
About being near that.
Right.
Well, it's almost too much to take on. Lisa Kraft, help us look ahead. Are there plans afoot for getting the dust off those trees, for some kind of economic redevelopment? How are people thinking about the future?
Well, there's a lot of neighborhood activists who are very concerned with the air quality, and depending on your point of view, you're either hysterical and you're paranoid about the air quality or you're somebody who's got their head in the sand about the air quality. It seems like and even though there's been so many tests in the federal and local agencies and independent agencies and agencies from Canada, everybody keeps coming and everybody reads the results their own way, so I think it's kind of every person for themselves.
Is the government saying that it's okay or not?
Yeah, for the most part they are, but then you hear reports about workers at Ground Zero having elevated levels of mercury in their blood or, you know, but then you go, oh, gee, but I'm 6 blocks from Ground Zero, so maybe
here.
I'm safe. Everybody's got air purifiers down here.
Is the dust is not in the air anymore. Is the smell gone as well?
The smell's mostly gone, except when you go way down there. I always notice I taste a metallic taste on my lips when I go down closer to Ground Zero, but the fires are out, so that's a big relief. And, but people are really looking forward. There's a lot of positive things. And I personally am looking forward to the spring and hearing children again and, seeing the recovery effort has gone so fast that it just feels like, it feels very hopeful to me.
That's good to hear. And Deborah Ortega, what about you? When you look ahead, how do you see the future?
Well, I think I see the future a lot brighter today than maybe a month ago or 2 months ago, because I just felt like I was in a tunnel. And I think that's because I finally, you know, made some decisions in reference to going back to Battery Park or just moving out of there a little further ahead. So, and I now know that, you know, my kids are settled and, you know, they have their own environment and they have their therapy. And I can now start to focus on Pinchos in a manner that I need to in order to, you know, come ahead. But I really had to take care of my family issues and making those decisions and settling us before I, you know, could put Pinchos in front of anything else. And
take care of the restaurant.
Exactly. We need to focus on that. And I think, you know, if we huddle together as, you know, business people, I think we can get the attention that mm-hmm. we need down there to get people, you know, to, you know, maybe cheer up a bit after they've taken a walk from ground zero you know, do come in and have something to drink and, you know, it's okay. It'll be fine. You know, we're making it.
Mimi Lester, you're young and you've got a long life ahead of you. What do you think you'll remember out of this incredible, awful few months since September 11th?
Well, I'm never going to forget it. I saw it out of the window at school, and it's going to shape the rest of my life. It's made my friends and my peers more active. They're more aware of politics, of what's going around in the world now, and they will continue to be, which is a good thing. I mean,
what's it made you think about human nature, Mimi?
It's left me confused. I don't know. I mean, they said that they did it in the name of God, but what that means to so many people is so different, and that leads you back to maybe they just did it because they're crazy and they want revenge because really, as a country, we have so much more, but it's just left me confused. I don't know.
Well, we'll all be sending our best wishes your way for more and more clarity as time goes by, and we admire you for hanging in there, Mimi.
Thank you.
And we thank you for joining us tonight. Thanks a lot. And Deborah Ortega, we will all vow to come to Pinchos Restaurant in Tribeca when we make our pilgrimage to Lower Manhattan.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Lisa Kraft, to you and your husband and daughter, we wish you well there and only better and better times as the time rolls ahead. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Jack Beatty, there's nothing like hearing it firsthand to remember that this is not just a distant history lesson.
No, this was their life, and as Mimi said, it's going to be with her for her whole life as a kind of defining event. And just the things they said, you know, Lisa spoke of the complicated smell. She said it was a mixture of everything that was in the building.
And then left the rest to a kind of discretion.
Yeah.
Because part of that
going
was...
to stay with, that's going to stay with me for a long time.
Yeah, a complicated smell. Can't trust the air yet. Don't know what the future's going to be like. And it's just a corner of the world. The rest of New York begins bit by bit to be up and on its way. And we can only wish that Tribeca will be soon, too.
I think the whole country wants it.
Jack, thanks for joining us this hour.
Okay.
And thanks to all of our guests from the neighborhood of Tribeca, recovering in the shadow, a one-time shadow of the World Trade Center in New York. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online. Go to WBUR.org and click on Special Coverage Forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to Special Coverage from WBUR.